Chapter 16. The Blue Dock foreman shook his head as he ran to the end of the listing.
"I don't know what it is with you folk," he said. "This is the second time in 2 months. Do you deliberately run into the middle of your battles?"
"Of course not," Simacro said stiffly. "It's hardly the Springhawk's fault if the Council and Aristocra keep sending us into the chaos to fight people."
"It's hardly their fault if you don't win the battles faster either," the foreman countered,
half turning to peer out the viewport at the Springhawk floating nearby, silhouetted against the blue-white disk of the frozen Chela surface filling half the sky.
"We want it fast enough," Simacro assured him. "And let's not get overly dramatic, shall we? There's not that much damage."
"You don't think so?"
the foreman said sourly.
"Well, I suppose that's why you're out there running into missile salvos, and I'm in here putting your ship back together."
He lifted a finger.
"Since her nodes need replacement, 7. Hull plates needing replacement, 82. Spectrum lasers needing repair or refurbishment, 5. And what's this nonsense about adding an extra tank of plasmasphere fluid?"
"We use a lot of plasmaspheres."
"And where exactly does Senior Captain Thrawn suggest I put it?"
the foreman retorted.
"His quarters? Your quarters?"
"I have no idea," Simacro said. "That's why you're in here, performing maintenance miracles, and we're out there making people regret tangling with the Chiss Ascendancy."
"This would take a miracle,"
the foreman grumbled, looking at the Questus again. Still, he seemed pleased by Simacro's small compliment.
"The least he could do is come ask for these miracles in person."
"He's in consultation with General Bakeef right now," the foreman sniffed.
"No doubt planning his next foray into trouble. Fine. I'll get started on the rest of this and see if I can find enough space somewhere for this impossible plasma tank he wants."
"If anyone can do it, you can," Simacro assured him. "What kind of time frame are we looking at?"
"At least 6 weeks, maybe 7,
the foreman said.
"If I get a rush order from Bakeef or Supreme Admiral Jafosk, I can maybe slice a week off that."
"Well, go ahead and get started. I'll see about getting you that rush order," Simacro said. "Thank you."
"Thank me by not wrecking your ship next time."
"What? To make the Council wonder if they still need people like you?"
Simacro asked blandly.
"I'd love to see the Council try their hand at this job," the foreman said. "The Ascendancy would never fly again. Go on, get out of here. I've got work to do."
15 minutes later, Simacro was on a shuttle heading for the surface. A hard knot in his stomach.
"Do you deliberately run into the middle of your battles?"
the foreman had asked. Simacro had waved off the sarcasm, but in the core of his heart, he wasn't nearly that certain. There'd been at least 2 times during the Leo Aeoan skirmish, maybe 3, when Thrawn had taken the Springhawk far deeper into the enemy fire zone than he'd had to. Nearly all of the damage the foreman had groused about had come from those particular sorties. Had Thrawn been trying to glean additional information on the new Leo Aeoan tactics as he'd claimed? Or was it possible he was starting to lose the judgment and tactical insight that had raised his name to such prominence? Thrawn had implied he'd initiated his current meeting with Bakeef. But maybe it was the other way around. Maybe Bakeef had noticed the same troubling subtext in the after-action reports and was having some of the same doubts as Simakra. Maybe he'd called Thrawn in to find out what was going on. And if the general decided Thrawn was no longer capable of commanding the Springhawk... Simakra took a deep breath.
Stop it, he ordered himself.
Even if Thrawn was relieved of command, that didn't necessarily mean Simakra would be restored to it. The Springhawk still had an important name, and the Oofsa family wasn't the only one who would love to have one of their own in charge. Still, it was an interesting thought.
An interesting thought, General Bakeef said, pursing his lips. The question is whether that thought is dangerously inspired or merely criminally insane.
I don't see why either adjective has to be attached, sir, Thrawn said,
his voice carrying his usual mix of respect and confidence.
The small scout ship I'm proposing...
You don't?
Bakeef interrupted.
No, sir,
Thrawn said calmly.
A scout ship could easily slip the three of us past any sentries or watchers General Yiv might have placed along the way. The data we collect would not only give us a better idea of how large this so-named Nikar Dune destiny is, but also offer hints as to how solidly those behind Yiv's battle line are being held and controlled.
To what end?
There are several possibilities, Thrawn said. We might be able to foment revolt among some of them.
Preemptive action, Bakeef interrupted again. Never get past the Sindicure.
Or possibly lease bases or supply depots from them.
More preemptive action.
Or if there are unconquered people scattered among them, we might learn how they were able to resist the Nikar Dune.
Bakeef frowned thoughtfully. That last could indeed be quite instructive. Even better, a straightforward data-gathering mission wouldn't generate nearly as much outrage among the Aristokra as Thrawn's other suggestions. But even there, the whole thing was swimming in risk and uncertainty.
Independence and resistance are a difficult combination to maintain, he pointed out. Any halfway competent conqueror would never permit it.
Unless Yiv isn't aware of the situation, Thrawn said. In fact, as you suggest, that's probably the only way such a situation could continue.
So independence, resistance, and vacuum-tight secrecy, Bakeef said. The odds against these theoretical allies existing are getting rather tall. Do you need anything else from them? Proficiency in small arms, maybe?
No, nothing else, Thrawn said.
Either he hadn't noticed Bakeef's sarcasm, or had chosen to ignore it.
We can find a way to work with whatever other skills they might possess. The primary focus now has to be on finding them.
If they exist.
If they exist, Thrawn conceded.
At any rate, I've already spoken to Caregiver Thaddeus and Skywalker Ciri, and both have indicated willingness to go with me.
You spoke of confidential matters to unauthorized personnel?
Bakeef asked, hearing his tone go ominous.
Skywalkers and their caregivers know many things even senior officers sometimes don't, Thrawn said. That said, no. I offered no restricted information. I merely posed the question of whether they would accompany me on a long-distance journey of unspecified destination and purpose.
For a few seconds, Bakeef gazed at him, weighing the options, considering the possibilities, assessing the risks. Nothing about this mad scheme exactly filled him with confidence. But if the information Thrawn and Ar'alani had brought back about the quiet infiltration of the Nikar Dune was even halfway accurate, Something had to be done. And the quicker, the better.
There are members of the Sinecure who consider you an ungimbaled laser,
he said, pushing the Questus back toward Thrawn.
There are times I'm inclined to agree with them.
The Nikarjun are a serious threat, General, Thrawn said quietly. Possibly the most serious the Ascendancy has faced in recent history. General Yiv is competent and charismatic, with the ability to both conquer and enlist those in his path.
And if we find these potential allies you're hoping for, how do you propose an alliance to a Sinecure that has refused all such entanglements for centuries?
Let's first find them, Thrawn said. We'll deal with the Aristocra if and when we have to.
Barkeev sighed.
Ungimbaled laser. You're sure you won't be missed?
Thrawn nodded. Mid-Captain Simakro is overseeing the Springhawk's repairs. It requires enough work to keep it in Blue Dock for at least 6 weeks.
How did you arrange that much damage?
Barkeev held up a hand.
Never mind. All right. I'll have a scout ship assigned to you and get it prepped. But not a word to either Thalias or Ciri about your actual mission until you're underway. Understood?
Understood.
One final consideration, then,
Barkeev said, putting the full weight of his long career into his voice.
You're not only putting yourself at risk, but also risking the lives of the two women, one of them an immensely valuable Skywalker. If the whole thing goes crash dive, are you prepared to have their deaths on your conscience?
I'm aware of the danger, Thrawn said. I would never want the weight of such memories and regrets. But I'm more prepared to see their deaths through my action than I am to put the entire Ascendancy at the same risk through my inaction.
Barkeev nodded. He thought Thrawn's answer would be something like that. And unfortunately, he had to agree with him.
The ship will be ready by the time you've collected your fellow travelers and your supplies, he said. Your orders will be cut but sealed. No one will know about your mission but me.
Thank you, sir, Thrawn said, standing up. Thank you, too, for not adding the extra burden of a reminder that your career is also on the line.
You worry about your Skywalker in the Ascendancy,
Barkeev growled.
I'll worry about my career. Now get out of here, and may Warrior's Fortune smile on your efforts.
I wonder what they're talking about,
Ciri murmured, looking up from her Questus and the picture she'd been drawing. She craned her neck toward General Barkeev's closed office door, halfway down the busy corridor, as if moving her head a couple of centimeters closer would magically give her the ability to see or hear through it.
I don't know, Thalias said,
resisting the impulse to remind the girl that she'd made that same half-question comment twice already, and that the answer wasn't going to change until Thrawn came through the doorway. But the topic of the unheard conversation wasn't hard to guess. Thrawn's vague question about whether she and Ciri would be willing to go with him on a special mission would have been intriguing enough, even if it hadn't immediately been followed by this meeting with Barkeev. But it had been followed by the meeting, and the only reasonable conclusion was that the two of them were discussing the details of that mission.
They're coming,
Ciri said suddenly. Thalias looked at the still unopened door, feeling a touch of bittersweet memory. Back when she was Chiri's age, she'd been able to do that same trick, using third sight to know a couple of seconds in advance when something was about to happen. Most people, at least those who knew what Skywalkers were, took the whole thing in stride. But there'd been a few others who'd never gotten used to it. freaking them out was half the fun of doing the trick. The door opened, and Thrawn emerged. Bakif followed, but stopped in the doorway, and for a moment, the two men held a final bit of inaudible conversation. Thrawn nodded at last, and started down the corridor toward Thalias and Jiri.
"Good afternoon, caregiver Thalias."
Thalias turned. Syndic Thurfian was standing there, smiling the smile she'd seen on him way too many times. The look was never a genuinely friendly one, and it was nearly always the prelude to bad news.
"Good afternoon, Syndic," she replied. "What can I do for you?"
"I wonder if you'd be good enough to come to my office for a few minutes,"
Thurfian said.
"There's a matter I'd like to discuss with you."
Thalias felt her stomach tightening.
No, not now. Of all the times he could have chosen. "I'm sorry, but my commander is on his way,"
she said, keeping her tone neutral as she nodded back toward Thrawn.
"I'm certain he has some official duty for us."
"I'm quite certain he hasn't,"
Thurfian said, still smiling.
"Apparently you've forgotten that your ship has gone into Blutok for some fairly extensive repairs. Unless General Bakif has dug up a spare ship, Senior Captain Thrawn can't possibly need you."
"You might be surprised at Captain Thrawn's ingenuity," Thalias said, feeling sweat gathering under her collar. It was now, all right. The worst possible time. And so, of course, he'd chosen it. "At any rate, I'm under his command, not yours."
"Well, let's ask him then, shall we?"
Thurfian shifted his gaze over Thalias' shoulder.
"Senior Captain Thrawn,"
he said, his voice holding the same false cheer as his smile.
"I need to borrow your caregiver for an hour or so. Surely you have no objection?"
"None at all," Thrawn said, his eyes flicking briefly to Thalias. "I presume you won't also need Ciri?"
A hint of a frown touched Thurfian's face.
"No, I just need Thalias. Why would I need Ciri?"
"I don't know," Thrawn said. "That's why I asked. I'm glad you don't need her, as she's fallen slightly behind in her studies. I expect the Springhawk's repair schedule will give her time to catch up."
Thurfin's frown disappeared.
"Ah, of course."
"I should be there to help her," Thalias said doggedly, trying to think. If she couldn't find a way out of this...
"This won't take long,"
Thurfian promised.
"Until later, Captain Thrawn."
"Until later," Thrawn answered.
The Syndicule complex was about 100 kilometers from Fleet headquarters, a short 20-minute trip by tunnel car. Neither Thalias nor Thurfian spoke during the journey, mindful of the half-dozen other officers and Aristocra in the car who might overhear any conversation. They were nearly to the end of their journey when Thalias finally came up with a plan. Not a good plan. Probably even a desperate one. But it was all she had. It took 2 minutes in the privacy of the restroom for her to set things in motion. 2 minutes of time, and way more courage than she thought she possessed. But then it was done, and she was committed. And she could only hope she hadn't brought complete ruin upon herself. They arrived, and, still in silence, Thurfian walked her down the corridors of Ascendancy Power to his office.
"All right, I'm here," she said, as Thurfian ushered her into his office and motioned her to a chair. "What's this all about?"
"Oh, please,"
Thurfian protested mildly. Closing the door, he circled behind her and sat down at his desk.
"Don't pretend you don't know what this is about. You promised me a report. It's time to deliver."
He activated a Questus and pushed it across the desk to her.
"Tell me everything you know. everything you've learned, everything about Senior Captain Thrawn.
For a long minute, the young woman just sat there, her face rigid, her body unnaturally still, seeking, no doubt, a way out of the trap. The trap she'd stepped into of her own free will, of course. It was either that promise, or Thurfinn would have turned around, walked back into the personnel office, and canceled her appointment as the Springhawk Skywalker's caregiver. With a threat like that hanging over her head, she'd had no choice but to agree. But it hadn't been willingly. Not by a long shot. Even now, as he looked at her expression and body stance, it was clear she was hoping to get out of the deal. Too bad. Her hopes didn't matter. Nor did her reticence. All that mattered was that Thrawn was up to something new, and Thurfinn was getting tired of his antics. He needed a lever he could use against the Maverick, and Thalias's detailed knowledge of Thrawn's other recent activities was that lever.
"Come, come. We haven't got all day,"
he said into the taut silence.
"The sooner you finish, the sooner you can go back to fawning over your big hero."
"I assumed this would wait until the entire campaign was over," Thalias said, making no move toward the Questus.
"I never gave you any sort of timetable," Thurfinn reminded her. "The deal was very clear. I would get you aboard the Springhawk, and you would be my spy."
Thalias flinched visibly at the word. Thurfinn didn't care about that either.
"Everything you need to know about Senior Captain Thrawn is in the official records," she said. "Once you've read them, I can answer any other questions you have."
"I have read them," Thurfinn countered. "And you're stalling."
"Not stalling,"
Thalias said, standing up.
"It just so happens I have an appointment elsewhere. If you'll excuse me."
"Sit down,"
Thurfinn said, putting all the coldness of Chila's surface into his voice.
"You don't wish to talk about Thrawn? Very well. Let's talk about your family."
"Don't you mean our family?"
"I mean your original family," Thurfinn said. "The family who bore you, and who held your allegiance before you were taken away from them to become a Skywalker."
Thalias paused, standing halfway between her chair and the door, a whole play of emotion skittering across her face. She had no memory of those years, Thurfinn knew, which made this the ideal additional lever to use against her.
"What about them?"
she asked at last. Thurfinn hid a smile. She was trying to sound calm and uninterested, but the tight muscles in her throat and cheeks gave away her sudden interest and uncertainty.
"I thought you might like to hear about their current situation," he said, "and how you could perhaps help them."
He paused, waiting for her to respond. But she remained silent. A cool character for sure, who wouldn't be easily swayed. But Thurfinn had had plenty of experience manipulating such people.
"They're not in great shape, you see," he went on. "The family has always been poor, but the recent shift in the prices of certain minerals has pressed particularly hard on them. The Myth family has many resources, some of which could be turned in their direction."
"I don't even remember them."
"Of course not,"
Thurfinn said.
"You were far too young when you were taken. But does that really matter? They're your people. Your blood."
"The Myth are my people now."
"Perhaps,"
Thurfinn gave a little shrug.
"Perhaps not."
Thalias's eyes narrowed.
"What's that supposed to mean? I'm a full member of the Myth."
"Hardly,"
Thurfinn said.
"You're a merit adoptive, and a relatively new one at that. You have a long path ahead of you before your position is anything other than precarious.
Thelius looked down at the Questis. Are you suggesting that my position with the Myth depends on my betrayal of Thrawn?
Betrayal? Of course not,
Thurfian said, putting some righteous indignation into his voice.
Thrawn is a member of our family, at least for the moment,
he reminded himself silently.
And talking about him hardly qualifies as betrayal. On the contrary, not reporting any questionable activities is where betrayal would lie.
Then let's make this simple, Thelius said. I've never seen him do anything questionable, illegal, or unethical. I've certainly never seen him do anything against the Myth. Good enough?
Thurfian gave a theatrical sigh.
You disappoint me, Thelius. I'd hoped you had a future with the Myth. But if we can't even trust you to help us keep watch on a potential danger to the family, I can't see how we can keep you with us. But that's your decision. I can keep watch on Thrawn myself.
He raised his eyebrows slightly.
Starting with whatever he's up to right now. I noticed he was talking with General Barkeef again, so that's probably the best place to start. Perhaps I'll take an hour or two to look into that before I begin your rematching procedure.
Thelius tried to hide her reaction, but it was no use. His offhanded threat to rematch her back to her old family had done the trick. He would give her the next hour to consider what life without the Myth would be like, and then he would start the procedure. Abruptly, she pulled out her own Questis and peered at it. All right, she said. You win. Again, Thurfian hid his smile of triumph.
Really, sometimes it was just too easy.
Excellent,
he said, gesturing her back to the chair.
Though, as I think further, I wonder if it would be better to head back first for our talk with General Barkeef. You can begin your report along the way.
You're right. We're leaving, Thelius agreed. But not to Fleet HQ. She held up her Questis. You're to take me instead to the Myth Homestead. Thurfian's sense of triumph vanished.
What?
He asked carefully. You said it yourself, she said. I don't have a stable position with the family, so I've made arrangements to remedy that.
How?
He asked, his blood suddenly running cold. If she denounced his interest in Thrawn to the wrong people... No, that couldn't be it. She couldn't possibly know enough about the labyrinthian web woven around the upper ranks of the family.
If you think there's anyone higher than me you can appeal to...
I'm not going to appeal, she said. I'm going to take the trials. He stared at her.
The trials?
Merit adoptives can ask at any time to take the trials, Thelius said. If they succeed, they become trial-born.
Kindly do not lecture me on my own family's policies,
Thurfian said stiffly.
And that's only if they succeed. If they don't, they lose even merit adoptive status.
I'm aware of that, Thelius said. There was a slight tremor in her voice, but her jaw was firmly set. But you were going to throw me out of the family anyway. She lifted the Questis again. I've petitioned the office of the Patriarch, and the petition's been accepted.
Fine,
Thurfian said between clenched teeth. Curse this woman anyway.
I'll give you the instructions on how to get to the homestead.
The Patriarch's office has requested that you accompany me. Thurfian hissed out a curse. The final spiral to his plans. She'd outmaneuvered him completely. She, or Thrawn,
Could he have anticipated this confrontation? Certainly Thalias couldn't have come up with such a dangerous scheme on her own. And if it was Thrawn, how had he persuaded her to risk her entire future with the myth for him? Just one more reason this man needed to be taken down.
Of course,
he said, standing up.
I wouldn't miss it for all the riches in the Ascendancy.
Ciri had never been good at reading adult faces. But even so, she had no trouble seeing that Thrawn was surprised and concerned as he put away his questus.
Is something wrong?
She asked anxiously.
He hesitated a moment before answering.
It appears Caregiver Thaddeus won't be joining us, he said.
Oh,
Ciri said, looking past him at the little ship he'd brought them to. The last of the crates of supplies were just being taken aboard by the dock workers, and he'd said they'd be leaving as soon as Thalias arrived. Only now, they weren't.
So, what are we doing?
Thrawn turned to gaze at the ship.
This mission is vitally important, Ciri, he said quietly. Thalias didn't say much. I gather she wasn't free to talk openly, but it was clear she would be occupied for at least the next few days.
So we're not going?
Ciri asked, still struggling to read his expression.
That depends on you. He turned to look at her. Are you willing to go with me, just the two of us, into the depths of the chaos?
For a moment, Ciri's mouth and tongue and brain seemed frozen. A Skywalker never went anywhere without a ship full of people around her. That was the first rule and promise she'd been given when she first began her training. Girls like her were too rare to risk to anything less than a full warship or diplomatic cruiser. What Thrawn was asking was never done. Ever. But he'd said it was important. Could it be important enough to break all the regular rules?
Can we do that?
She asked hesitantly. He shrugged, a small smile touching his lips.
Physically and tactically, of course, he said. I can fly, you can navigate, and the ship itself is well enough armed to get us out of any trouble we're likely to find ourselves in.
I meant, are we going to get in trouble?
You? No, he said. Skywalkers are effectively untouchable by any punishment. You might get a scolding, but that would be all. He paused. If it makes a difference, Thalias didn't suggest that we wait for her, or that we abandon the mission completely.
If I don't go, what happens?
Then I abandon the mission, Thrawn said. What would take days under the control of a Skywalker would require weeks or months of jump-by-jump travel. I can't afford months.
His lips compressed.
Neither, I fear, can the Ascendancy.
This game, at least, Ciri knew way too well. An adult would make vague threats or vaguer promises with big stuff happening either way if she didn't run for the extra hour, or skip one of her rest days, or do whatever it was they wanted. But as she gazed at Thrawn's face, she had the eerie sense that he wasn't playing the game. In fact, she wasn't sure he even knew how to play it. And if Thalias really was expecting her to go.
Okay,
she said.
Can you... Never mind.
What?
I just wondered if you could get me some more colored graph markers. That's all,
Ciri said, feeling her face warming with embarrassment. Of all the stupid things to ask for.
As a matter of fact, Thrawn said, there are two new boxes already aboard, and four binders of art sheets to draw on.
Ciri blinked.
Oh,
she said.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thrawn gestured toward the ship.
Shall we go?
You're troubled,
Thrawn said into the silence of the scout ship's bridge. Ciri didn't answer. Her eyes focused on the brilliant stars blazing through the canopy. Her mind churning with the sheer wrongness of this. Skywalkers didn't fly alone, ever. She'd always had a Momish along, someone to take care of her and make her meals and comfort her when she woke from a nightmare. Always. Thalias wasn't here. Ciri had hoped she would rush in at the last moment and demand that Thrawn take her with them. But the hatch had been sealed, and the controller had given permission to launch, and Thrawn had taken them out of the cold blue of Chila's atmosphere into the colder black of space. Just the two of them. No officers, no warriors, no Momish. Ciri hadn't always gotten along with her caregivers. Some of them she'd really, really disliked. Now she was wishing even one of the rotten ones was here.
They've never understood you, have they?
Thrawn said into her silence. Ciri made a face, like he would know anything about that.
You want more than what you've been given, he continued. You don't know what you'll do when you're no longer a Skywalker, and it troubles you.
I know what happens,
Ciri scoffed.
They told me I get adopted by a family.
That's what you'll be, Thrawn said. That's not what you'll do. You'd like to fly, wouldn't you?
Ciri frowned.
How did you know that?
The pictures you've been drawing with the markers your caregiver gave you, Thrawn said. You like drawing birds and flashflies.
They're pretty,
Ciri said stiffly.
Lots of kids draw flashflies.
You also draw landscapes and seascapes as seen from above,
Thrawn continued calmly.
Not many your age do that.
I'm a Skywalker,
Ciri muttered. Thalias had no business showing Thrawn her pictures.
I see things from the sky all the time.
Actually, you don't.
Thrawn paused and touched a key on his control board. And suddenly, all the lights and keys on his board went out, and the board in front of Ciri lit up. She jerked back. What in the name?
There are two hand grips in front of you, Thrawn said. Take one in each hand.
What?
Ciri asked, staring numbly at the hand grips and glowing lights.
I'm going to teach you how to fly, Thrawn told her. This is your first lesson.
You don't understand,
Ciri said, hearing the fear and pleading in her voice.
I have nightmares about this.
Nightmares about flying?
About falling,
Ciri said, her heart thudding.
Falling, being blown around by wind, drowning.
Can you swim?
No,
Ciri said.
Maybe a little.
Exactly, Thrawn said. It's fear that's driving those nightmares. Fear and helplessness.
A touch of annoyance rose above the bubbling panic. First Thalias, and now Thrawn. Did everyone think they knew more about her nightmares than she did?
You feel helpless in the water, so you dream of drowning. You feel helpless in the air, so you dream of falling.
He pointed to the hand grips.
Let's take some of that helplessness away.
Ciri looked at him. He wasn't joking, she realized. He was deadly serious. She looked back at the hand grips, trying to decide what to do.
Take them.
Abruptly, she realized something else. He wasn't ordering. He was offering. and she really had always wanted to fly. Setting her jaw, choking back the fear, she reached out and gingerly closed her hands around the grips.
Good,
Thrawn said.
Move the right one to your left just a bit.
To port side,
Chiri corrected. She knew that one anyway.
To port side, Thrawn agreed with a smile. See how the positions of the stars changed.
Chiri nodded. Their ship had turned a little to the left, the same way she'd moved the hand grip.
Yes.
The display just above it, there, shows the precise angle of your turn. Now, move the same lever forward a bit.
This time, the changing stars showed the ship's nose had dropped a little.
Aren't we getting off course?
It'll be easy enough to get back, Thrawn assured her. Now, the left-hand grip controls the thrusters. Right now, it's set at its most delicate level, so that a small movement translates to a small increase or decrease in thrust. Rotating the grip will change that. We won't bother with that right now. Ease it forward, just a little, and note how our speed changes on that display. That one, right there.
By the time they finished the lesson, half an hour later, Chiri's head was spinning. But it was a strangely exciting kind of spin. She hardly noticed any strain over the next few hours as she used third sight to guide the ship toward the edge of the chaos. When she was done navigating for the day, after they ate dinner together, she asked if he would give her another lesson. And that night, for the first time she could remember, she had a dream about flying that wasn't a nightmare.